When there's trouble, you know what to do. Call Cyborg, he can shoot a rocket from his shoe. Cause he's Cyborg, doodle-doodle, something like that. Oh yeah, na-na-na-na,
big blah. Okay, and welcome back to another episode of Mary and Andy Geek Out.
I'm Mary, he's Andy.
Yep, same as usual, nothing has changed since then. We are wrapping up Season 3 of Teen Titans. We're covering the last four episodes of this season. The first one of which is Episode 10, Can I Keep Him? Where Starfire basically adopts Silky, and shenanigans ensue.
Episode 11 features Mumbo Jumbo. It is called Bunny Raven, or How to Make a Titan Disappear, in which the Titans get pulled into Mumbo's hat, and shenanigans ensue.
Yes. And then the last two episodes, simply titled Titans East. And this one is basically Cyborg temporarily leading the East Titans and finally confronting his season villain, Brother Blood.
And shenanigans ensue.
Yeah. Not the fun kind, though. More of a, there's a lot of clone robots of me. You know, it's funny about these last, like, four episodes is that we get, like, two silly episodes.
And we know they're silly because they have the Japanese intro.
Which is, like, beginning to become, like, a reoccurring theme here. And then we have the two, like, last serious season finale episodes.
Which, interestingly, has Cyborg singing his version of the theme song.
Yes, which you guys heard for the beginning of this podcast episode. I couldn't help but put that one in. You know what's funny? It's like a lot of the classic Teen Titan episodes that I think of seem to stem from Season 3. In particular, these two episodes, Can I Keep Him and the Bunny Raven episode. For some reason, I thought they were a Season 4 episode, but I guess I was mistaken. They just seemed to hit their mark by Season 3 and just started delivering hit after hit after a while.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. A lot of it is because we've got so much established by now that weird episodes like Bunny Raven just land really well.
Yeah. It honestly lands much better than the Mad Mod episode, too.
Yes.
Which, I guess, at the end of this podcast episode, we will discuss our favorites and least favorite episodes for this season. But let's not delay any further. Let's talk about Can I Keep Him?
We've been waiting for this.
We've been waiting for this. You know, I was honestly shocked and surprised, you know, as you guys know by now, that Silky has shown up in background cameos a couple of times during the season.
It makes me so sad that DVDs weren't, you know, it wasn't standard to have a DVD with all these special features and creator commentary like it is now, because there is so much I want to know about the process.
Right.
I want to know when they decided that they were going to bring back Silky. I mean, obviously, at the beginning of the season, they knew, but...
Right.
And just wonder what the thought process was. Maybe it was a marketing thing.
Yeah, it's too bad the DVD doesn't have any kind of commentary on that one, because I would have loved to hear them saying, like, oh, look, there's Silky. We put him in there just for we thought it would be fun.
Yeah, there's some little, like, features that have some behind-the-scenes stuff, but it looks like it was made for, like, TV spots.
I think this really displays there's a lot of, like, hidden continuity going on here that's, like, it's under the surface, but it's, like, if you're a fan or if you're watching through them like we are, it's pretty appreciative. Silky is a good example because they encountered
Killer Moth.
Killer Moth, okay. Oof.
Getting your villains scrambled.
Sorry. Killer Moth in Season 2. And so that fits with the timeline because Beast Boy adopts Silky from that fight. And so it makes sense that Silky would show up in the background since then.
But we also have, would he be the primary villain just because he's in the beginning? Because he's not really the main villain. We've got one of our most boring villains, Johnny Rancid,
yeah.
Loses most of his personality when he doesn't have a motorcycle.
Yeah, and then he has...
This time he's got a big robot dog.
He has a robotic dog named Rex. I know, like, as soon as I see him, I'm immediately like, all right, whatever. For some reason, I thought he was dating Kitty in this episode, but then I remembered, wait a minute, no, it's the Spiderhead guy that dates Kitty.
I mean,
and that's way
that,
more
that
interesting.
Actually would have been funny.
I know,
if
right?
If they'd like tied Rancid in because Kitty just has terrible taste in men.
Right. Oh, that would be really funny, yeah. But yeah, no, Rancid just thrown in here just to, I guess, for a background villain. They didn't really, they barely needed him. They just needed someone to fight at the beginning of the episode.
He also was there just sort of to set the theme for the episode.
Yeah.
The idea of pets.
I think they just, they really just didn't, yeah, pets theme episode, I guess. I don't know. I feel like at this point, the writers should have just trusted their audience and let them just tell the story without having to need to play up a big action scene.
I think they do have an action quota to fill.
It's kind of bothering, in all honesty, but, I mean, whatever. I mean, it helps. It does establish that pet theme.
Yes. So, Robin gets a badass moment during the fight. He takes out the giant robot dog almost takes out the giant robot dog single-handedly, and all the other Titans stop and appreciate his work. So that's nice, although unnecessary.
Yeah. Robin has been getting, like, new weapons this season that I've been noticing, which is pretty nice that he's been kind of changing it up lately.
Maybe for action figure purposes?
Ooh, action figure purposes. I wouldn't be surprised for that. But we don't need to worry about that scene, because we then cut back to the tower.
Also, they make an ass joke.
Yes, because Johnny Rancid, he says, my dog is kicking your... And then he gets kicked by Beast Boy,
who is a donkey.
Very good joke. I really like that one. Anyway, so they go back to the tower, and the tower's a mess. Things are being chewed on and everything like that.
It's a wreck. Robin decides to go off and fight Johnny Rancid on his own, which maybe is the reason they showed him fighting the dog single-handedly, because they were like, Robin can take this chump on his own.
Right.
Especially now that the dog's gone.
And that Robin doesn't have a broken arm. As seen in season 2.
Yes. So the rest of the Titans decide to do a room check, which I appreciate in the sense that we get to see everybody's room. Have we seen Starfire's room before?
I think this is our first time seeing Starfire's room.
Okay. Yes.
At least in, like, this amount of screen time.
Yes. Beast Boy pulls Starfire aside and is like, you have to hide my pet genetically mutated moth larva for me.
Yeah, and first she's like kind of horrified by it, but then it was making cute ugly noises and grins at her, and then she just falls in love with it. And then she has these like imaginations in her head about like things that she would do
like
with
a
Silky.
Montage of her happy life with this grub.
Yeah, and honestly, this is what really sells the episode. Like, the whole Starfire scenes and her loving Silky just really sells it to you about how much, like she cares for this creature.
And I want to talk about Silky's design really quickly.
Okay.
Like, they came up with them back when Killer Moth was first introduced, and all the moths went poof and turned into the cute worm things.
Yeah.
I do like that they didn't, like, try to work to make it more conventionally cute. Because I think they're adorable, but they also are kind of gross. And it's just, like, a perfect balance.
Yeah. And I think it's great, too, because they kind of lean into that with Starfire's grossness.
And weirdness,
right? Because, like, she's trying to figure out what to feed.
Which begs the question, what was Beast Boy feeding him?
I know, right? I also have a question about, like, how did they not find Silky when Beast Boy trashed his own room in The Beast Within? But that's besides the point right now.
I bet there were, like, messes after that, and for a long time they were thinking, was this left over from Beast Boy's rampage?
I know. Anyway, and so, like, there's a scene where she's trying to figure out what Silky will eat, and one of the things she gives to him or tries to give to him is, like, a mustard with a straw coming off of it.
And
continuity, yeah, but she loves mustard and she loves drinking it, and it's just so Starfire. So then she finds out that Zorka berries are the thing to feed Silky, and she loves Zorka berries, and she's like, he's gotta love these, and she starts feeding him Zorka berries, which causes Silky to grow.
Do you happen to take a note of how she described its flavor?
No, I didn't.
I just remember Bitter was one of it, and I was immediately like, oh no.
Yeah. It's very juicy. It's very, very juicy looking. Like, they kind of look like fleshy blueberries in a way.
Zorka berries! No creature can resist the delicious bitterness of Zorka berries from my home planet Tamaran.
So then he starts getting bigger and bigger, and now she has to try to hide Silky from Raven and Cyborg.
Yes, who are the only adults today.
Yeah, it's great. And so she really leans into her alien foreignness here.
Oh, right.
In two different scenes.
Yeah, the first time we know Starfire was playing dumb for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's a scene right before they enter her room where Silky eats the curtains. And then she hides Silky. And Raven says, like, you had a fight with your curtains. And she goes, oh, it's a Gorp Gorp holiday.
The festival of berating drapery.
Yes, that's it. Thank you. And then she goes, stupid curtains. And then she just, like, sets them on fire and just blows them up. And Raven's like, all right, then. And then she leaves. And then afterwards, when they're in the main room, I think it's Robin that asks Starfire, like, Starfire, why is there, like, a big hole missing in our sofa? Or, no, why is the sofa missing? I think it was. I think it was just completely gone. And she goes, oh, Robin, what is a sofa? Your Earth customs are so strange. And then she just leaves.
It's very good.
I know, it's great. Everyone's just like, what? It's so, I love their reactions to it. And I love how she just really leans into, like, I don't know what you're talking about. Doop, 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 doop. So good.
Oh, also, something I noticed while we were watching the show. One of the things that you will always get in a silly episode is a montage.
Mm, yeah. There's, like, two of them here, pretty much.
Yeah, because there's Starfire's imagination montage. And then, is there one where they're trying to find Silky?
Or
trying to catch Silky?
In my head, it's more of, well, I guess it's not a montage, but it's more of Silky remembering the memories.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't count.
Okay, that's fair.
Now, they do have to chase down Silky because he's eating everything.
Yeah, and then
and he's huge.
And everyone's like, he's got to go. And Starfire's super crushed. And she takes Silky to, like, a nearby island. It's not that far away from the city, too, which is hilarious. And she just leaves him there.
Oh, and they do the standard thing where a child has to, like, leave behind his beloved dog. Or is like, get out of here, I don't want you. Only Starfire's a little nicer, but she does have to, like, blast Silky to let go of her.
Yeah, it's really, they really lead into how sad and awful the scene is, which makes it, like, oddly, all the more funny.
Yes, melodramatic.
Melodramatic. Oh, this is just that episode.
And then Killer Moth shows up immediately after, because I guess he was just waiting for her to drop him off on the island.
He also probably has, like, sensors on
Silky. To track his own experiments.
Yeah, or maybe he has a good sense of smell. I don't know.
What they did with the rest of them. I hope there's, like, a weird meta zoo somewhere where they just take villains' experiments and try to rehabilitate them.
Ooh, that sounds fun. And so then Silky, like, transforms into a huge moth, absolutely gigantic moth.
That eats Johnny Rancid's next attempt at a giant robot pet.
Called Rexzilla, and it's totally Truckosaurus from The Simpsons.
That's not from The Simpsons, that's from actual, like,
oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a real thing you get at a lot of the big demolition derbies, and it's really cool.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
It's a giant robot T-Rex that breathes fire. It doesn't move too much, but it breathes fire.
I believe it, yeah. And so they have to fight Silky, and Starfire is like, I don't want to fight you. And
she stops Raven, like, she doesn't help Raven finish him off, and almost loses the battle for them.
Yeah. And so then, like, eventually there's, like, a tussle, there's a fight, and Killer Moth, like, falls off of Silky. And Silky kind of lands in the middle between Starfire and Killer Moth. And then comes what's probably like the best scene in the entire episode.
Come to the one you love best scene.
Yeah. He's like, here, Silky. And like, Starfire has all these terms. Like, she refers to herself as Knorfka.
Which we didn't check, but might have been what the nannies are called.
Yeah. And then she refers to Silky as something else. Mike Bungorf. That's Bungorf. Right. Mike Bungorf, which
I
is
I think it
so
is Bum.
Bum. Yeah, it is Bum. Bungorf. Would not be good if it was a
which
bung.
Is adorable, even if it means anything.
Yeah, Bungorf. And
or
so
nothing.
She's like, I love you, Silky. And then Killer Moth
tries to do the same tactic.
It's so good. And
like, up until this point, he's been, like, being a proper villain. He's got, like, this crazy fire whip that he's been using to
totally
make Silky
abusing
do.
Silky, yeah.
Yeah. But now that they're on the ground, he's like, here, what was
I think
it?
He, did you write, I didn't like, write it down, but I should have. But
it's like test subject or
here,
experiment.
Number 2214.
Yeah.
Did Killer Moth create you? Yes, he did.
And Silky does flashback between both of them.
It's so funny, too, because, like, it's like he's in a test chamber and he's, like, strapped onto a thing and he's being force-fed, like, fed food through eye droplets. And it's, like, clearly not a very welcoming environment. And then it cuts to Starfire being lovely. Attended
most of the time.
Most of the time.
But, yes, Silky is torn and then explodes rather than make a decision.
I love it. It explodes and like pink goo is everywhere.
It's really horrifying for a second because it's not just the pink goo. There's what looks like the rib cage remains.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what's coming, you'd be like, what?
Yeah.
This is a kid's show?
It's really horrifying too. And you look and you're like, oh my God. And then Starfire is depressed, she's sad, and then she hears a noise, and there's Silky back in his larval stage again. Just
because he wasn't growing, he was just molting.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like, what? All right. And so then
I accept it.
And so then Silky starts eating his own exploded remains, and
and
the rest
Cyborg
of
gets his leg back.
Oh, yeah, Cyborg gets his leg back. Yeah, we didn't
Silky
mention that.
Silky ate Cyborg's leg.
Yeah, and he's like, sweet, my leg! It was a good scene. Anyway, so Silky starts eating his own remains. The other Titans are like, ugh. And then Starfire's like, hmm. And then she eats some of it. And then the Titans are like, oh, my God. Like, their reactions are even of more disgust.
Yeah, it's horrifying. And then they live happily ever after eating Silky's gross but, berry shed.
Yeah, because Starfire says it tastes just like Sorka berries. And so they just start eating it. And Robin's like, should we stop them?
What's funny is they were presenting this like this was a solution to the what do we feed him problem.
Yeah.
But I think the solution is just ask Beast Boy.
Yeah, that's true. He's been keeping Silky alive the whole time.
For almost a whole season.
Yeah.
At least.
But it's funny because I was about to say, like, Robin says, should we stop them? And Raven says, well, that mess has got to get cleaned up somehow. And they're like, all right. So they take Johnny Rancid and Killer Moth away. And then Starfire and Silky eat so much of the remains, it turns into a heart shape on the road. It is just so funny to me. Just, like, the things that they did in this episode.
Very cute.
Oh, my gosh.
And unnecessary.
You mean the episode itself is
something? No, just that end part.
I know, but I just love it, just like how much she loves Silky, and it's so great. I just love how just hokey it is, or just how fun and just melodramatic, and I don't know, I just love
good
it.
Good use of Starfire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to have a Starfire episode that's not to do with
her sister.
Yes.
Or her being an alien.
Yes.
Which is usually the two. And now, and this one's just like, bonding over a pet. That's pretty awesome.
It's funny because I think Beast Boy just is like, I have no responsibility for this thing anymore.
I am done being a parent.
I don't know if we mentioned it, if I asked the first time we saw Beast Boy's room, but why does he have a bunk bed?
Oh, yeah. I forget. I don't know if we mentioned it, but my only answer to that is, wouldn't you want to have a bunk bed? When I was growing up, I always want to have a bunk bed. I just the fact of sleeping on the top bed to me seems so cool. That's like,
so you just are saying it's because he's childish.
Yeah, I mean. Yes.
Also, I do love the thought that was put into the rooms. I mean, it looks like the most thought was put into Beast Boy's room, which has the most personality. It's a huge mess. There's a Three Stooges poster. There's a Space Invaders poster.
Yeah, like his is really.
Starfire's room is pink.
And it's very, like, sterile. And then Raven's room at least has all these books.
Which did not appear in this episode, but, you know, she had the whole goth thing.
Yeah.
Cyborg, you'd think he'd work a little harder on the humanity aspect of it, but it does seem to be mostly, like,
machines. Like, his bed is literally like a operation table.
Yeah.
Like Frankenstein. I don't know if we've seen Robin's room yet.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. But, yeah, you are right. We should.
When his, like, Cyborg keeps going back to his hang up over his humanity and, like, well, maybe you should start by having a room with, like, I don't know, windows.
I don't know if Cyborg, I could be misremembering, but I think Victor Stone, before he became Cyborg, was like a football player. Regardless, like, if he, like, he should have had some sort of hobbies or some sort of.
You remember Tara's room?
Did she have a room?
Yeah, I guess she did. She did, yeah. And it was, like, wallpapered with, like, a mural of the desert with, like, canyons and cacti. It was really pretty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she felt at home there.
Please, you must not see my dwelling in this condition. It is very messy.
This is messy? Girl, have you seen Beast Boy's room?
So, you and the curtains had some sort of argument?
Yes. Today is Gorb Gorb, the Tamaranian Festival of Berating Drapery. Stupid curtains!
Aliens.
Bunny Raven, or how I learned to make a titan animal disappear.
How to make a titan? Oh, I said the name wrong in our intro.
Oh, that's okay. It's a long.
Yeah, I just wrote Bunny Raven.
Yeah, that's all right.
So this is delightful.
Yes.
It's another silly episode.
Mm-hmm.
It has a song.
Mm-hmm.
It has a whole bunch of, like, cartoony references. Just so many gags and ones that aren't references, which makes them work better.
What do you mean, ones aren't references? Just like jokes in general? Like,
it, as opposed to Revolution, where most of the little gags were, you know, referencing British culture in some way.
Yes.
In this one, there's a couple of references, but a lot of it's more like homage, like to old cartoons and.
Vaudeville.
Vaudeville, yeah.
I'm lucky. I like to think of myself lucky as seeing a few vaudeville shows, like actual live performances. And they were a lot of fun. And this episode kind of brought me back to that, mainly because of that, that old timey piano sound.
Yes.
Which is, you know, like if you want to like showcase that this is going to be a fun episode, you just play that music and you're like, okay.
Right, from the very first moment that Mumbo shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I guess when I say, like, classic cartoon stuff, it's because classic cartoon stuff takes directly from vaudeville.
Mm-hmm. That's true, too.
So, we start with a bank heist.
Mm-hmm.
And Mumbo is hamming it up. Mm-hmm. And the Teen Titans show up. And Raven keeps undoing his magic, so he's like, screw it, and drags her into the hat.
Yep.
Mostly for revenge, by the sound of it.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the episode takes place in the hat.
Yeah, you know, it's great.
Which is weird, because we established his seat of power as his magic wand.
In the previous episode.
Yeah.
But now it's his hat in this time.
Oh, it isn't, though. Because he doesn't get depowered in this one.
Oh, you're right.
But
yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I was going to say that I always like it. Teen Titans, from what I've noticed, I only know two examples, and Mumbo is the other one. But I like it when, for Mumbo and for Control Freak, they were shown as, like, background villains or intro villains and then kind of put away. And then Then they were kind of given their own full-length episode.
I mean, Mumbo did get a B-plot.
Yeah, that. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, his was just a B-plot, and then they're like, no, you know what? This guy's fun. Let's actually give him a full
and
episode.
Tom Kenny does a great job as Mumbo.
Yeah. And so I really liked it because just this is another when you see this episode, I can't help but compare it to the Mad Mod episode.
Yeah. Because it's similar wacky adventures.
And it's like kind of
focused. Like where reality is kind of not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, it's taking place inside a magic hat as opposed to taking place in an inexplicably warped reality.
Right. And of the two episodes, I like this one way better. I like the Mumbo bet.
Yeah, that's no question. Like, I mean, I've already made a few points for why it's better.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, and I agree. I mean, obviously, we shouldn't forget, but or to say this out loud, but as it said in the title, Raven gets turned into a bunny.
And she's adorable.
And she's adorable. It's super cute. And I thought the whole time we would see her with the hood on, but we get many long shots and scenes of her without her cloak on. And it's like, oh my God, it's super adorable. And she has her little crystal thing on her forehead. And it's great. I love it. It's just to see that, just see that on Raven. Cyborg gets turned into a bear.
In a tutu.
In a tutu. Starfire gets turned into like a tiger?
Yeah, like a small kitty tiger.
Yeah.
But definitely tiger colored.
Yeah.
Robin is a monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And we take a few attempts at Beast Boy, who can just change into any other animal before Mumbo turns him into a lamp, and he spends the rest of the episode turning into other inanimate objects.
Which is really great, because the way he would communicate is, like, mainly through phones, but sometimes he's done it, like, as a megaphone, he did it as a ticker tape.
Yes. And, like, whoever came up with that concept in the writer's room just should be so proud.
Yeah, no, it honestly works very nicely to see that.
Yes. So, the whole place runs on Toon logic. So, pretty much all their efforts are futile.
Yeah, they're trying their best to, like, fight against Mumbo and his Mumbo clones. There's so many
Mumbo
clones.
Yeah, like, everything in the hat world has a blue person with a pointed nose like Mumbo.
And the domino mask.
And the domino mask, except for the giant white gloves.
Yeah, that's true. There are a few exceptions to that one. But yeah, they're basically blue.
Oh, and what the heck was with any card? He didn't become a character.
No, he didn't, yeah. Like,
yeah, when Raven first wakes up in the hat, she gets approached by a walking plane card who introduces himself as any card.
Yeah.
Basically to tell Raven it's hopeless and never show up again.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like, okay, I guess that was that.
I just completely forgot about him, but now that I remember him again, I'm like, oh, that didn't pay off as anything.
Yeah. Except just for someone as exposition.
Yep. That we didn't really need, because really, everything's nonsense. That's kind of the point.
Yeah. And then they're trying to fight Mumbo inside the hat, but all their weapons are, like, useless now. Like, Robin is fighting with bananas. Cyborg, basically just...
Oh, yeah, he tries to shoot his cannon and he gets a bang flag.
Yeah, he gets the bang flag.
Starfire coughs up hairball, glowing green hairballs.
Yeah.
And those aren't helpful, and Beast Boy's a lamp.
Yeah, Beast Boy's a lamp, yeah. So it's really fun, and it's really just like, just to see this all in action.
Yes.
And I guess what plot, or the conflict, the coming tension is there's a show inside of the hat.
Yes.
And Mumbo is performing in front of the whole crowd of other Mumbos. And basically he's going to, like, his final act is to make the Titans disappear. And so, basically the Titans have to figure out how to stop him before he does that.
While he's humiliating them.
Yeah. And so he goes through each of the different Titans one at a time, and near the end of the episode,
and Raven has sort of an arc here where she refuses to accept that it's real magic. She's like, it's an illusion, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
When what finally defeats Mumbo is using his cartoon logic against him.
Yeah, pretty, it's, I don't, I want to have to admit this. I think this may be the weakest part of this episode because I don't fully understand how they were able to defeat him.
I liked it. I think they probably could have written it better, but the point is they were trying to solve it by real world ways.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, like, once they accepted the world and knew how to use it.
For the audience at home who hasn't seen the episode recently, basically, there's, like, they basically paint themselves to be, like, the same color as the background.
Which would not work in real life, but would work in a cartoon.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. And so...
Which is weird to say because they are not real life. They are a cartoon, but...
And so when the cages appear on the stage floor, Mumbo's like, here are the Titans! And then all of his Mumbo audience starts booing at him, and he's like, what's going on? And he looks around, and none of the Titans are in their cages. And he gets right up close to one of the cages, and Raven's eyes opens up, and then she shouts, Alakazam! And then she basically kicks Mumbo so hard that he goes flying out of the hat, and then they follow suit. What's interesting about that part is that the Mumbo audience is not fully with Mumbo. They're not, like, at his beck and call, so that when he messes up, they boo at him. And when he's arrested outside of the hat, the Mumbo audience stands up and cheers because it's such a great show. Which is very interesting to me.
Hey, we were following the rules of entertainment in there.
Yeah. I guess
it reminds me of, like, you know, when Roger Rabbit, like, gets his hands out of the cuffs and he's like, it only works when it's funny.
It only works. You know, I think you are absolutely right, Mary. I am probably putting way too much logic into this.
Yes.
And I think, like, I should just go with it.
I'm more willing to let go in this one. I wasn't willing to let go as much in Revolution. Not, yeah.
Yeah. But this one, yeah. No, I think you're right. I think I just was overthinking it like Raven was. Wow. I've learned something, too, in this episode.
When I talk about a couple little things. One, there's multiple, quote-unquote, acts with titles. And each one has, like, a cute little animated segment like you would, like, in the commercial break or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So... We did not write those down, but similar to the title of the episode, it'd be, you know, this, or this.
An even
longer title.
Yeah.
I wish I'd written some of them down.
Yeah, those were really good jokes. There was also the Mumbo Muppet, who would just every now and then he goes, places, everyone, show starts in 5 minutes, and his arms would just wave around.
Yeah, and a definite Muppet Show reference.
Yeah, there are a lot of, like, references to other things. I say that now I can't think of it, but it does have it's just that feeling of the vaudeville aspect.
And even littler thing that I just thought was really cute. Before the Titans get turned into animals, they have one fight with Mumbo inside the hat where he's giant. And Starfire, like, gives him a good, like, hit with her lasers, and Cyborg's like, even teeny, you pack a punch, and she giggles, and it's just cute.
Oh, yeah.
One more joke I really liked. Beast Boy cannot fight when they're fighting a bunch of gloves. And he turns into a megaphone and says, can someone give me a hand? And all the gloves start clapping.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
This was good for all the background jokes. Like, there's a lot of background gags going on, especially behind the stage. I really like that.
Oh, also, once everything's cleared up, unless you wanted to talk more about Mumbo Land. Once everything's cleared up, one, you get that really cute image where Raven puts on the top hat and winks, but also the weird armored super police.
Oh, yeah,
that come back to take Mumbo.
Yeah.
Like, have they shown up before?
They've shown up before. I think they showed up for Professor Chang.
Yeah, I feel like they should have, like, built that into something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've established that there's a super police presence, and it's kind of odd.
Yeah. I just find it funny that they've been in that bank the whole time and no one did anything
about
it.
In a hat, yes.
Unless it was like a pocket dimension.
Like, you'd think like the police would come and take the hat into custody.
And it's just like, we're going to just take this hat and put it on Frosty the Snowman.
Put a handcuff on it. Oh, God, it would bring Frosty to life and it would totally be terrifying. Would.
Yeah. Anyway, really fun episode.
I'm a huge fan.
I liked it a lot.
Also, Tom Kenny has experience as pointy-nosed blue guys and DC villains.
So Ice King.
And the Penguin in The Batman.
All right. God bless that man. Always fun when he comes around and just has a good time. And you know what's sad about this is that this is the... Mumbo probably shows up again, like, virtually every other villain in the last... In the series finale.
When we get all the villains.
But this is his last episode dedicated to him. This is the only episode really dedicated to him, except for that
B-plot. He did have a pretty big role in that. Yeah. He had a lot of fun shenanigans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, him and Mad Mod... Basically, last major episode appearance.
Oh, man,
for the
if
series.
This show had gone on longer, maybe they'd have more like villains either teaming up or.
Oh, my
fighting.
God. A Mad Mod Mumbo Jumbo episode would be insane.
Or like Control Freak with anybody.
Control Freak, yeah.
And he'd be down
he's
for
coming
team
up
ups.
Next, he's coming up, I think, the first episode of season 4. So.
Because we've established Titans East.
Yeah. Well, that's season 5.
He gets 2 good episodes, huh?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I did check, and he is original to the animated series.
Yeah.
Which I think I discussed already, so let's move on.
Yeah. I really like this episode. I think this is probably one of the best silly episodes that they have.
I agree.
And when I say silly episodes, I mean all the ones with the Japanese intros. I think it's just the most consistent tone, the best kind of humor... The best kind of villain, like, gags. It's just really just kind of boom, 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 like, kind of, like, flowed along, and it was great.
It reached its full potential in terms of how crazy it could get.
Yeah, and it didn't bog itself down with anything dramatic or...
I mean, oh, well, I
guess... Like, I was thinking of Mad Mod in that case.
Yeah, his revolution when they learned the true meaning of America.
America, yeah. Anyway, overall, great episode.
We're gonna make sure you don't have any encore performances. But, my magic! How did you escape?
I had a better trick up my sleeve.
I gotta know. Come on, kid, just between us. Tell me what you did.
A magician never reveals her secrets.
And now we've come to season finale, Titans East.
We open with, Brother Blood talking, monologuing. Well, he's talking
he monologues.
To hooded,
he's a monologuing.
I mean, he's
villain.
Talking to hooded figures that turn out to be robots. So yes, that's a monologue.
Can we talk for a minute about like Brother Blood's obsession with Cyborg? It started off as like a fascination to obsession to just full blown like creepiness. Just like
full on Slade.
Like just yeah. Yeah, I guess so. But it was just like, it's just like, dude, you should chill the hell out. Because the robots are basically cyborg copies, except they're like yellow and...
Yeah, they're hive-colored.
Hive-colored, yeah. And so then he's like, my students are going to be all cyborgs, and then I'll be invincible. And then when that fails, he's like, well, I'm going to turn myself into cyborg. And it's like, this guy needs to chill the fuck out.
Get a hobby, take up knitting.
Like, he became, I guess, though, that's why, like, I wasn't really feeling it for him for, like a cyborg villain. But by then, these two episodes is like, what's up?
Have I talked about Brother Blood on this podcast yet? I think I told you.
I mean, we've talked about him a few times
by now.
I mean,
like the comics.
I don't think so. Go for it.
Okay, well, we can cut this out if I already did. In the comics, Brother Blood's... Well, the extent of his similarities is he's a cult leader. And from, like, the Cult of Blood, which was, I think, some offshoot of Christianity that had something to do with Jesus' blood. I don't remember a lot of it now. But did not have the manipulation powers. Did not have any powers, as far as I can recall. Anyway, so the point is, pretty much they just took his name. The writers wanted somebody who was not like Slade in that he was charismatic.
In the spotlight.
In the spotlight. I would say they got the in the spotlight part. I think the charisma needed some work.
I would also say, like, the other thing, like, they did different was, like, Slade, you never know what he's planning. But Brother Blood's like, he really lays it out on the table for you, like, this is what I'm going to do. And you're like, okay.
Yes. Again, John DiMaggio doing his best.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to say that he didn't have much to work with. I'm just saying that his character probably could have been a lot more interesting.
It's funny because I know you've referenced Draken a few times now, but, like, Draken's a much more memorable villain because of just how well he's written, so...
Well, yes. Also, he's funny.
I guess so. And
I wonder if that's sort of part of why I don't like Brother Blood, is, like, I expect the Dr. Draken comedy to come from him, and right. It never does.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's,
I expect him to call for Shigo.
Though there are, admittedly, the bits where Brother Blood is furious against Cyborg can be pretty funny. Like this, like we talked about it before, but when Bumblebee
backstabs him,
and he's like, "Was there anyone in my school that actually was there to learn?" That was really funny. So any kind of moments when he gets like pissed off at the Titans is actually pretty funny, I think.
Yes. But so we open with Brother Blood. He's planning something. He wants to get Cyborg. He's in Steel City, which is not the city the Teen Titans are in, and that's about all I know.
It sounds like it's east. Well, duh.
Well, yeah, it turns out it is where Titans East is, but I was confused because I did not remember that place was called Steel City, so I thought this was a completely unrelated city.
It gives off, like, Gotham vibes because it just seems like it's, like, a dreary place.
It's got tall buildings and it's really dank.
Yeah.
And not the good way.
Yeah, cool. Sorry. Please continue.
And then we cut to Cyborg singing his own theme song.
Yeah. Which they played a lot in the commercials, I remember that. Because it's such a good scene. And so Cyborg's going there because he's helping, like, establish, like, a new branch in Teen Titans.
Yes.
Like, they're expanding their commodity.
Which was really exciting back in the day because, you know, we've talked about continuity.
Right.
And it's just is, you know, it's all building up.
Yeah. We see Aqualad again, we see Bumblebee again, Speedy, and then we see two new additions, Mossy Manos, which we'll get to in a moment. I just want to, real briefly, because this is probably the only moment in the whole episode we'll talk about him, Speedy. I really wish that we only saw Speedy once beforehand, and that was during
the tournament
in Season 2. And I wish, like Aqualad, he came back just like one more time, kind of just to reestablish that connection, and then he comes back just to make that more impactful.
What's funny is Speedy literally was created like as a Robin knockoff.
Yeah, and he doesn't really have much of a personality here.
Yeah, he's kind of a dick and he's vain.
Yeah, and that's about it.
And he shoots arrows.
Aqualad also is a bit different here as well.
He's exasperated because Speedy got fish tacos.
Yeah. Like Aqualad, very far cry from Season 1, where he's more calm, cool, collected.
Yes.
Except when it gets
He didn't have roommates before.
That's true.
Also, I want to say about the fish taco thing, like, Beast Boy, I understand the vegetarianism, because when you turn into those animals, it feels kind of like any meat you eat would be some form of cannibalism.
Right.
With Aqualad, I'm just like, I know you talk to fish, but don't those fish eat each other sometimes?
Yeah.
What do you do then?
Yeah, what do you eat too, Aqualad? Do you eat kelp? Oh.
Sea tofu.
And you know what? I'm going to say it right now.
Meat.
Yeah, he just goes up and like, this cow is mine.
He just grabs a cow.
Anyway, Aqualad needs to chill the fuck out when it comes to bursting the pipes. Because every time he fights anyone, he literally like takes the pipes out of the walls and just sprays people with it. It's actually a lot like Mermista now that I think about it from
She-Ra.
From She-Ra. And I'm thinking, what's up?
An image in my head I want to share with everybody. You see a commotion, seagulls flying in the air. Suddenly, Aqualad, like, breaches the water, grabs a seagull in his mouth, and goes back down.
I love that. The bird. what was I going to say? So, I think, you know what they should do is, if they ever have to worry about being fighting again in the tower, they should just put pools of water, like, stored within the walls. That way, Aqualad can be like, all right, I'm going to just take this. That way, I don't have to burst into the pipes here.
Yeah.
Because he's definitely not fixing them.
He does not have that power.
He does not have that power. And then that brings us to Mossy Menos.
Mossy Menos? I know, it sounds wrong. They are a couple of speedsters, but their power only works when they are touching. They are twins, and they only speak in Spanish. And they are actually voiced by a man whose parents were Puerto Rican, so that's nice. And I can understand a lot of it, but I like that they don't actually have subtitles. I think that's nice.
And I like it's not like just simplified Spanish as well, or taking words that are easily translatable into English.
It's spoken by a man who we can presume is a native speaker.
Yeah, like I've taken a few Spanish classes, and like, so the problem is, though, is that Mossy Menos speak very rapidly, which is part of the gag.
Yes.
And so I'm like, oh, please, for the love of God, slow down. But like the parts that I could pick up, though, I was like, okay, I can kind of hear what they're trying to say.
Yes.
You had a very good point about speedsters and their powers.
Yeah, because as we see, like, later in this series even, speedsters can be way overpowered. There's so many applications to super speed.
Right.
So, Mossy Menos have the limit where if they're not touching, they can't do the super speed.
Yeah, which actually comes into a play season 5.
Yes.
Which we'll get to then.
There they get dubbed.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I guess for that too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I one, they're original to the series. They have not seen much use since, which I think is kind of a waste, honestly, because they're a pretty good character concept. I think part of it was, one, they needed two more characters to fill out the roster against the Teen Titans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it's 5 versus 5.
Right.
They needed comic relief, which they hadn't really introduced yet. They could have used Aqualad's fish assistant, who hasn't appeared for a while.
Oh, yeah. I think he comes back, too, actually.
Huh. I don't remember him. But that would have been kind of redundant, I guess. But So, one, it sounds like they were like, okay, these two characters are kind of one character. Done. But also, comic relief and a different body type, just for a little variety, I guess.
Yeah. It's different everything, which is great. And I just like it how they refuse to speak in English. It definitely sounds like they can understand English, so they just don't.
Aqualad can understand Spanish.
Yeah.
So who cares?
And then meanwhile, Speedy's like, I have no idea what you're trying to say to me. It's great. I think they're deliberately trying to antagonize Speedy, which is
also
nice.
I can't help but feel like they were somewhat inspired by the pill bugs in A Bug's Life.
Yeah, but unlike the pill bugs,
they're
speaking an actual language instead of just some weird Russian nonsense that wasn't actually
mock Russian.
Mock Russian, yeah.
Meet Moss and Menos.
Hola, somos gemelos. Nacimos con 7 veces la habilidad para ser más rápido que el sonido, pero solo somos poderosos cuando nuestros cuerpos se rozan. Así, más y menos, sí podemos. Fuimos a Guatemala.
Okay, so we got those are our Titans East. They're establishing the new tower there. It gets breached. Again, well,
They're also doing a really bad job.
They're doing
mostly because nobody's listening to Bumblebee.
Yes, that's true. And so Cyborg kind of comes in there and kind of cleans it up. And it was really great, though, too, because at the end of the... Because Cyborg's like, I want to stay.
This one has a montage.
Yeah, this one has a montage. Yeah, you're right. But I want to get what you said about Bumblebee, though, because Cyborg initially says he'll stay at Titans East and says this will be his new home, but then he decides to go back to the original Titans And he says, listen to Bumblebee. She's got a great head on your shoulders.
Oh, it was like, the exact line was, you've already got a leader. You just have to listen to her.
Yeah.
Which, like, is really so it's kind of infuriating.
Yeah?
Well, since it's a kid's show, that's probably not the case that they were ignoring her because of misogyny and racism.
Right.
But still, it's like, can you imagine being the only one who really knows what to do and what's going on, and nobody's goddamn listening to you?
Yeah.
Until some guy's like, hey, listen to her.
Listen to her.
Like, it makes me worry about, like, her position as a leader when they didn't think to listen to her until they were told to listen to her, you know? Like, can you imagine, like, if at your workplace nobody was listening to the supervisor until another person was like, listen to your supervisor?
Yeah.
Also, she's, like, ordering around a bunch of teenage dudes, and that can't be fun.
No. I believe, from what I recall, though.
But, I mean, she's definitely, like, the best for the position.
Oh,
like,
no, I
agree.
Established
that well.
And I think by season 5, we're going to see that they're definitely more, like,
a cohesive unit.
Cohesive unit. Actually, you know, it was funny because it reminded me their first fight together against this super bland.
Some rando.
Like, again, based on Cyborg because Brother Blood created him.
Wait, was he based?
Kind of looked like Cyborg, in my opinion.
It looked like they kidnapped him. I was a little confused on where Brother Blood found this
guy. What did he call him?
Steamroller. Yes.
I don't know, like...
He steamrolls.
Anyway, it doesn't... It's a giant robot dude.
He's a muscle.
Yeah, who cares?
Muscle classification villain.
But it's like, I can't help but compare this fight scene with the season 1 episode 2?
I think it's the first episode?
Episode 1?
You have the notes there?
Yes, it is season 1, episode 1, where they're fighting Cinderblock. And basically... Like, they're getting in each other's way, they're arguing, same thing for here as well. So it's kind of nice to see, like, this, like, Teen Titans, the original ones, kind of progressed and it became a lot better unit together, and so will this team.
Yes.
So, pretty, like, sets the standard. Everyone really likes Cyborg. They have a break-in, as you do for this season.
Which also, did the original Teen Titans have to build their own tower?
I guess so.
Or was there just sort of Wayne Enterprises is like, no, we're already wasting enough money on this first one. We're not building you a second one.
I wonder if the origin episode in season 5 will answer that. I don't know. No?
No.
You don't think so?
It's just how they become a team. There's not a montage where they get to build
like,
their
tower. Oh, look, someone left a... inconspicuous tea tower right here on the shoreline. I guess we'll just move into this one. Anyway, so then there's a big scene in this episode where Cyborg and Robin argue. Because Cyborg is like, I'm staying here. And Robin's like, no, you're part
of
my team.
That's actually the next episode.
Well, no, it's the end of this episode, beginning of the next episode. It basically ties it together. Yeah.
Yeah, and this one, they don't get into a confrontation. Cyborg's just like, they need me more. And he's not going home. And we also start with an old villain is also broke loose.
Yeah.
Professor Chang, which I had initially assumed that they were using him because we know he's an actual, like, city-destroying threat.
Right.
Not just a petty supervillain.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was a nice touch.
It was, yeah. And it's funny because then it shows, like, Professor Chang about to operate on Brother Blood. And everyone who's being controlled by Brother Blood has their eyes glow red. But the problem is Professor Chang's eyes were already red to begin with. So
well,
it's
now
like,
they're glowier.
Now they're just glowier, which is funny.
I also want to say about that scene, I'm pretty sure that Professor Chang does not have cybernetic expertise.
Right.
So Brother Blood has really taken his life into...
I think he would have done much better if he... Wow, I just thought of this. Gizmo, he probably still has Gizmo's contact information, and all he has to do is just,
yeah, but
like,
then he'd have to deal with Gizmo.
He just brainwashes him and just gives him to shut up and not talk, and then he's golden.
I suspect Brother Blood's powers aren't as all-powerful as he's under the impression.
Let's talk about that, because we were under the... Like, after seeing, like, these last two episodes, I agree with you. I think, like, his mind-controlling powers are, like, weaker, and I think
than he thinks.
I think it's more like a suggestion.
Because if we're going for the cult leader thing, he's probably used to surrounding himself with people who agree with him.
Right. And so, like, he controls, quote-unquote, his students to do what they say. And I think maybe he is, like, suggesting them or, like, kind of encouraging them to do that. But
he does have this line where he's like, some students have slipped out of my control, like Bumblebee, as if just sort of hand-waving it.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, these things happen, but I'm still super powerful.
Yeah. And then when he gets his cybernetic upgrades, though, that enhances his mind-controlling powers, so then he's able to override the
Bumblebee's resistance
among the other Titans East as well. Still can't get across to Cyborg, though.
Yes. Also, two things about his Cyborg upgrade. Brother Blood. One, custom colors. Two, he gave himself Cyborg hair. Like, before he had the sort of mostly bald, but sort of Wolverine-style hair points crown. When he became a cyborg, he decided to turn that hairstyle metal. And I think that's very silly of him.
Yeah. He gets rid of his arms and replaces them with metal.
For the most part, he mirrors Cyborg's implants exactly.
Yeah. And then he has his big fight with Cyborg,
where he has a whole bunch of new powers. Also, he can teleport.
Like, when did this happen?
He can walk on water. He can teleport. I still don't understand where, like, the laser blast came from in the last time we saw him.
Yeah, he has these powers, and it's super inconsistent, and it's like, okay, I guess.
Yeah, we're seeing some behind-the-scenes stuff, and I should have written down exactly what they said, because the words weren't poorly defined, but it felt like his powers are poorly defined.
His powers are... You're not sure what kind of powers he has.
The writers sure weren't.
Yeah, they're like, I guess he's just a grab bag of powers.
Where did the teleportation come from? Yes. They use it, like, twice.
And it's funny, because he only gets that...
Like, the telekinesis, I can pretend is magnets, but the teleportation, I don't know.
The teleportation comes after he gets his upgrade with Cyborg's thing, which makes me think, like, does Cyborg also have the ability to teleport, and he just tells no one about it, or he doesn't know how to do it? Like, it's in his code, but he has no idea.
We could say it is, like, the upgrade to Brother Blood's psychic powers.
Yes.
But it's still kind of bullshit.
It is really stupid. And you know what's also really stupid?
What?
That final scene. That final fighting scene. Because I remember when I saw that scene when it originally aired. And then when it ended, I'm like...
You'd forgotten it for a while.
No. Well, I know how it ended.
But you forgot the part, like, when we were talking about Bumblebee's resistance. I was like, actually, that is kind of consistent with how this resolves.
I guess. I don't know. Well, I did remember it, but
it
I was
goes
like,
back into Brother Blood not being all powerful. But there's another aspect you want to talk about.
Well, I was about to say, like... I remember, like, he goes, like, what? I should probably set the scene for the listeners here. But basically, Brother Blood is, like, basically tearing into Cyborg, ripping him into shreds. And he says he's trying to figure out what's making Cyborg so resilient to his mind control. He's so...
like, he's read the schematics. He's copying them.
Like, what makes Cyborg so... what's the word I'm looking for? I guess resilient, yeah.
Resistant,
yeah. And then he tears into it until we see his core. And Cyborg's like, he starts glowing blue all of a sudden. And he goes, it's not in the schematics. It's my spirit. And then he basically regrows his limbs, taking it apart.
The robots
and coming together. And then he basically just like destroys Brother Blood into like that he's just a torso now. And I was like, this is the most Deus Ex Machina ending to
it's
Teen
Titans.
It's very
shonen anime.
It's very shonen anime.
And I don't mind the hand-wavy explanation. Because Cyborg was like, well, he was trying to get into his mind, so I just kind of back.
Yeah.
So he hacked me, so I hacked him back.
It just feels like it comes out of nowhere. And I don't...
They were trying to make it very season finale, but yeah, you're right.
I feel like they could have done a better job.
You want to know something, though?
What?
I liked it.
Okay, that's fair. You are entitled to like whatever you want.
It is kind of because this is like not an extension of Cyborg.
Yeah, the conflict in this season for him was he's trying to prove himself of being his own man, or like
yeah, okay. Yes, the episode begins with the argument between Robin and Cyborg, because Robin's like, we need you, you're being selfish, which, holy, what the hell, Robin?
Yeah.
Robin does say I know a thing or two about being obsessed, which, you know, finally he says it.
Yeah. So Cyborg, I think, has these feelings of inadequacy.
Yes.
Maybe because he may feel like the robot parts are giving him a boost when he doesn't want to be seen as needing that. Like, he wants to be shown that he can be his own person.
I feel like they already resolved his robot thing by this point.
Yes, a couple of times over when he fought Atlas and when he encountered Felix. I feel like those two episodes really kind of helped him confront that.
Yes, and even this season where
Of episode one of this season, yeah.
But, yeah, this is the first time Cyborg brings up he wants to prove himself, and then he feels he's proven himself by the end.
Yeah, and then he's like, you know what? I want to go back to the Titans. It's too cold here.
Also, Bumblebee is really a natural leader.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If people listen to her.
I don't know. I feel like this could have been done maybe a little bit differently. And I think Brother Blood just wasn't the villain for Cyborg. It's the best villains are the ones that usually can reflect the heroes themselves. And that's not Brother Blood.
He changed himself to reflect the heroes.
Yeah, I know, right? He changed himself to be more like Cyborg.
It's more his own arc. That's a Brother Blood problem, not a Cyborg
that's
problem.
Not like, yeah, like, I don't want this creepy old man to like be like me right now. So I feel like this could have been done a little bit better to, like, have a better reflection on Cyborg trying. If he's trying to prove himself, then there should be something where he's maybe feeling inadequate that he's struggling to achieve. And I feel like this season didn't get that across too well.
Yeah, that's because they already did his story arcs in individual episodes.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it. He was already pretty much over his major issues. We do get the payoff to you owe me two. That's two headquarters you owe me. Because when he takes over Titan's East Tower, he's like, you do owe me a new headquarters.
Yeah. Which he takes over.
Yep.
I think this, due to time, I think we should wrap this up. Overall, really like season three. I think it was much stronger than season two. I think the episodes overall were higher quality in terms of art and story and diversity. And I don't find that there was as many duds in here compared to the previous two seasons. I feel like I kind of enjoyed them for the most part. What about you?
Yeah, a lot of strong episodes. A lot of ones that sort of, like you said with Bunny Raven, just ones that really stuck with us. That the non-serious ones that stuck with us, rather.
Yeah.
It's solid. It's really developing its own mythos at this point. Like, has
very
been established.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, though, when I was thinking about my least favorite episodes from here, I don't have a go-to one, but if I were to choose, Mad Mod has been sitting on me worse and worse the more I've been thinking on it, the Revolution one. And that one, I think I might have to go for that one, because I feel like it's just, like, the tone is just a bit over the place for a silly episode, and that the British references could have been a little bit more thought out, despite the fact that it was very, like, they had a very big vision about what they wanted it to do, that I think it kind of fell a little short of it. Right. What do you think?
I would say that Revolution was the weakest episode. but I think the one I dislike the most is Spellbound, just because it made me uncomfortable. And not in a fun way.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't like Raven being vulnerable, like I said, and to just have it blow up in her face.
It's very true.
Also, Beast Boy was just, well, Beast Boy was developing at that point.
Yeah. That was a good Beast Boy episode, I think, actually. Strongest episode? Favorite episode?
Of all of them?
Of all of them for season 3?
Okay. You say, because I haven't put thought into this yet.
Honestly, I think my favorite episode, you might be surprised about this one, is Haunted. The one with the Slade mask.
I mean, it's tight.
It's really good. I keep thinking about, like, this is a really good, intense, like, thrilling episode. And I keep thinking about that scene where they're locked in the room. And the Teen Titan characters just come together and really pull through. And it's really great. I really love it. I think it's just such a fun scene. And it's just really kind of thriller, almost creepy at times. And it really just shows the... how Robin's passion can go overboard. Really great episode overall.
So, I don't have a strong favorite. Bunny Raven was delightful. And, you know, I don't want to underappreciate silly episodes just because they're silly episodes. But one thing I really am looking for is character. And some of my least favorite episodes have the best character interactions. like the Beast Within has that nice conversation between Raven and Beast Boy. And
true.
Come to think of it, Spellbound has a nice conversation between Beast Boy and Raven.
It does too, yeah.
But I don't like those episodes, but what I really love about the show is characters. So that's all I got. I don't have a favorite.
That's okay. Yeah, that's all right. It's pretty good overall. They're very diverse this time. And what I think that just goes to show how strong of a season this one was. But anyway, I think that should do it for this episode. We might take a break from Teen Titans for the next one. Next podcast episode, we'll see how it plays out. But
did
we
you
will
have an idea?
I'm hoping to finish the Bug Fables one.
Oh, right.
And talk about Bug Fables. Because I've been playing that a lot, and Mary's been watching me play that a lot. But definitely we're going to keep on going this, if not the next one, then the following episode. But until then, thank you guys again for listening to this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And if you know any Teen Titans fans, or fans who, or people in general like listening to podcasts, show them this episode or this series, and have them listen to it. Thank you for listening.
Questions, comments, criticisms, whatever, can go to our podcast's email, which is
maryandandygeekout@gmail.com.
Have fun typing that.
Excellent. Well, have a good night, everyone.
Bye.